That is the SOS, the International Morse Code Signal. That was the International Morse Code Signal, the SOS, the call for help. And we are here with our inaugural program, Gilbert Talks Taxes, at the new studios. I'm still not sure what the address here is. 212 Main Street in downtown Rutherfordton, right across the street from a rusty old truck. We are here, right across the street from the courthouse. How's that? Catty corner to the courthouse. But we're live, and we got a big window. People can drive by and honk their horn at us and all kinds of things like that. They can my engineer this morning, the ever cheerful Tom. Good morning, Tom. He's cheerful today, I can tell. And we've got a special visit from Todd. Todd is here making sure that we are inaugurally connected, I guess. This is all brand new. This is, how long have you guys been on the air now? 1 week? From here.
1 week, yeah.
1 week. Is your microphone hot?
No.
It's not. Deliberately?
Probably. This is Tom's show.
This is not the Tom and Todd show.
The Gilbert and Todd show.
Well, Emily's with me this morning. I am Gilbert Carmona. I am an enrolled agent. So is Emily. She's an enrolled agent. We are two enrolled agents. That is why we can have a program called Gilbert Talks Taxes right here on
You probably don't have any commercials.
I probably don't have any commercials.
No. So you'll have to talk the entire hour. Will that be a problem?
Only 1 hour? I'll have to talk for only 1 hour.
I'm still in the days of me doing Gilbert's show. I don't think Gilbert can get started in it.
No. Yeah. Well, yeah. The first 20 minutes are usually, you know, just whatever. I was really nervous about coming here, though. I got to tell you.
Why is that?
Well, because I saw the Facebook feed. You guys, number one, we're feeding live on Facebook. Correct? Is that happening right now?
It's going now. Yeah.
Oh, good thing I brought it up.
Yeah.
We're new to this. 1 week old.
Now you have to remember, in Tom's radio career, he went from stone tablets all the way to modern computers.
Yeah, that's so, right.
Yeah, radio back then was shouting at people.
He's still stuck somewhere in the car era.
Really? You know, every now and then to make Tom feel at home, I'll say, "Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press."
Yeah.
Brings a little tear to his eye when I say that. Okay. You know who that was, don't you?
Absolutely not.
Walter Winchell.
Who is that?
He,
Maybe I should.
Oh, okay, Tom, calm down. Tom Tom came out of his seat on that one.
He was getting riled up over there.
Walter Winchell, was he the first, I mean, voice to be heard around the world?
To endorse you, that, you were gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was probably the first powerful news broadcaster.
Oh.
And meaning powerful in the sense of, if he said it, it was truth. Walter Winchell. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. And he would have the, that's where I got the idea for the International Morse Code Signal.
Yeah, okay.
He would have the Morse code, the actual going out, the news going out to the ships, that tick, 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 tick,
oh, yeah,
in the background the whole time. And you're like, can he not cut that off? But
we're gonna put a tick-to-tape machine in the back just for Tom.
Oh.
So you can read it, read the press.
I actually know how to read those. That's how old I am. That was before.
Put in a AP machine, an Associated Press, UPI, that would be the days of rip and read.
Yeah, well, you'd actually run with a piece of paper in your hands,
yeah,
up to the microphone.
Yeah,
I got a funny story about that.
Yeah, I want to hear. I want to hear somebody shout, "Hold the presses!" Again.
Hold the press.
Hold the presses. Hold the presses. We've got a story.
Oh, here comes.
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
So.
We're on a whole nother level now.
So we are hot, we are live. The program is Gilbert Talks Taxes.
Gilbert, I'm going to leave you in the trusted hands of Tom Green.
The ever cheerful Tom Green. He's very cheerful this morning, so we're good to go. So Emily and I have had a very busy week. I was going to send you an inner office, and I wanted to look up the numbers of where the IRS says we are as far as filings. Like how many tax returns have been filed by March 1st. They actually published that data. It takes a little bit of digging, but I was just curious. No pressure. You don't have to look it up right now, but I was curious as to how many tax returns have been filed. It has actually been a pretty smooth year so far. There have been very, very few problems with the IRS's internals, which, you know, kind of punctures a hole in their whole thing that they need more money all the time. or you know, nobody's going to get their refunds.
They've been coming out ahead of schedule.
Everything's been happening ahead of schedule. Everything. People have been getting their refunds ahead of schedule. We've had acceptances have been coming back ahead of schedule. They weren't even supposed to start releasing people that had EITC, Earned Income Tax Credit, refunds till after the 27th of February. Originally, that's what they were saying back in January. But there is a whole slew of people that have already gotten their refunds that had Earned Income Tax Credit. How do I know? Because they let me know. They send me little texts and Twilios and whatever else, however else they communicate with me, saying and emails saying, woohoo, got my refund. And I'm like, well, that is way ahead of schedule. So the turnaround times have been 14 to 21 days. I've again, very, very few issues. There is one issue, though, that's been happening, and that is with the, we call it Obamacare. We're not supposed to call it Obamacare. It is the Affordable Care Act, the premium. You notice they're totally even trying to lose that name. They're not, you don't see that name coming across anything. So they're calling it now the Premium Tax Credit, the APTC. I'm not sure where the A comes from, but it's the premium, advance payment. The advance payment premium tax credit, which is form 8962 for that tax credit. The problem has been that some people don't know that they had healthcare insurance, healthcare.gov insurance. So they go to an agent. I'm still getting used to all this equipment here. They go to an agent, and don't forget our cameras up there. So we've got two cameras, Emily. We got that camera over here, and we've got that camera up there. So you got to look to the left and look to the right, look to the left, look to the right. So that's for the people on Facebook, and that's for the people on our website. So people that file their tax returns, if you have healthcare.gov, what they call the marketplace, Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, if you're subsidized, if your healthcare is subsidized, then you need a form called a 1095A. If you don't bring me that form and I e-file your tax return, it will be rejected. Well, even if you paper file your tax return, it will be rejected.
Well, they'll send you a letter asking for more information.
Yeah, well, at our level, they'll send you a letter asking, for that form, for that 8962 form. What's happening is, so right now it's not going through, like if I e-file it, it literally comes back instantly rejected, saying there is no form 8962 and our records show that this taxpayer has it. And it's created just a handful of tax returns I've had. It really creates a problem. Sometimes the people don't even know they have it. Or they'll have it as part of a family plan. So you'll get a dependent. So for healthcare, because they can buy insurance till age 23 with their parents, so we have a 22-year-old professional who comes in, you do their tax return, then it comes back rejected, and they say, you have healthcare, subsidized healthcare. And they're like, no, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. So we do that two or three times. And tell them, well, the IRS computer says you do. So call your parents. Now I've learned. Call your parents. They call their parents. I've got this. So what do I do? There's actually there's workarounds for all of it, but I have to know the situation. So it's just created a little bit of problem. And this is actually on the IRS's radar. It's a big enough problem. And what happens is if you go to an agent, so you didn't go to the healthcare.gov marketplace yourself. You went to an agent, just a regular insurance agent. They'll do it for you, but they may not tell you that. And they don't have to. I mean, they went and shopped you and got you the best deal. But I always have this conversation with people as they're like, well, I didn't know I had subsidized healthcare. And I say, well, how much are you paying a month for full family coverage? $100. You're getting insurance for $100 a month and you didn't know you were subsidized. Have you bought insurance lately?
No.
No, exactly. That's what they say. I always talk about my school teacher that worked for 40 years for a school district up north. And she was subsidized and she was paying like $60 a month. And she thought that was expensive. because she'd gotten insurance forever for free, you know, because she worked for the school board. And she said, well, I couldn't believe how expensive it was. I'm like, ma'am, that insurance policy you have, it would be like $600, not $60. She about fell off her chair in my office when I told her that. She literally almost like turned white, like, because it's $6,000 a year that she had to pay back her subsidy because she did not tell them how much she was making. So this is a thing going on with the IRS right now. Be aware when you go to file your tax return, be aware about your insurance. It still is a thing. I know people thought that was all over. There is no penalty for not having insurance. There is no penalty for having a certain type of insurance. All that is gone and has been gone for 5 years now. But we still have the fact that if you are subsidized, that still goes on your tax return.
That mic probably needs to go right here because they won't hear me.
Oh, that mic needs to go here. Oh, we're having a technical difficulty here. So should I put it there? You got to grab by the stem. Okay, by the stem or it's going to fall off. Okay. This is great. This is live radio right here. It doesn't get any more.
Hometown radio.
It doesn't get any more live than that. So you think that they haven't been recording us?
No, my voice won't show up on that.
Okay, so we're here. This is great. They're having all kinds of meetings all around us. This is like broadcasting live from Starbucks or someplace like that. like
I don't even know if my mic's hot. I hope it is.
In the McDonald's parking lot. Like the time I broadcasted live from the beach and all the seagulls came and started eating my microphone. That was really a bad idea. I don't know why.
You ended up doing it from your car, right?
I ended up running to my car with all my equipment.
And seagulls.
The seagull, yeah, Todd remembers that. Thank you, Todd, for chiming in on that one. Todd remembers that. The seagulls were eating my microphone. This reminds me of the time I had the bright idea to broadcast live from the beach. Although I was able to write that business trip off. That trip off as a business trip.
Gilbert did really good for about the first break, and then you hear...
Oh, there was the flapping sound that I'm like, where's that coming from? And it was,
Burge.
Yeah, it was literally, yeah. They, I don't know what they thought my microphone was.
It was real quiet. And I was like, where are you at? Oh, I'm in my car.
I'm in my car at the beach. I was out on the sand.
Forgot to bring French fries for the seagulls.
No, that would have brought more of them. I thought. Okay, so. Let's get back focused here, if Gilbert can do such a thing. So, you know, we went right into the program. We didn't introduce ourselves.
Yeah,
We did. Okay. Gilbert Talks Taxes, WCAB, AM 590, FM 100.9, and we're a live feed on Facebook. So we're no longer at www.wcab59.com, Todd.
Purecountry101.com.
Purecountry101.com. Is there any other kind, Todd? Yeah, there's not diluted country. Pure Country. Say it again.
PureCountry101.com.
PureCountry101.com. I'm going to have to get used to saying that one. After 10 years of saying what I've been saying. This is good, though. This is good. Change is good. I love this. What you guys have done here is fantastic. So I am Gilbert Carmona. I have two offices, 704. None of that has changed. 704 Oak Street in Forest City, right next to Big Dave's Family Seafood. And I have my other office in Tryon at 226 South Trade Street, the beautiful Art Deco building right off the historic downtown Tryon. But one telephone call gets you an appointment at either location. That is 828-289-9300. And it is March 2nd. March 2nd. Thank you. March 2nd. We don't need Todd's technical expertise anymore. Todd has left the building.
Oh, no.
Todd has left the building. Mrs. Todd is leaving the building, too. We don't need his... did she just call me handsome? Thank you. A random stranger just called me handsome. We don't... Where was I? Everything works, right? Todd can leave the building?
Somebody compliments you, you just lose all.
I lost it all. So we're good, right? Without Todd, everything's working. Yeah, I don't smell smoke. I don't smell smoke anywhere. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Not yet. Good, good, good. This is really like professional, what you guys have here. This is very nice. Okay, so we already talked a little bit about taxes. I am a financial planner. I am an enrolled agent. Emily is an enrolled agent. We are enrolled with the Internal Revenue Service. Our authority comes from the IRS, Department of the Treasury, and that is why we can talk about taxes for 1 hour nonstop. What are we going to do about commercials? That's the question I'm ready for a break. You're just enjoying this way too much.
Just keep going and check the board.
For 24 hours, old Jerry used to do that. Yeah, he was good.
He was the
king of it. I'll tell you what.
We
are accepting new clients, but caveats. We are accepting new clients, but right now, on March 2nd, the next big deadline, Emily, is?
Partnerships and S corporations.
And what's the due date for those?
March 15th.
March 15th is the due date for those. And right now, if you have a partnership or an S corp tax return due, the best we can do is file an extension right now. If you think, now typically partnerships and S corporations do not owe taxes. Okay, they hand a K-1 to the partners, a form called K, the letter K and the number 1 to the partners, or they give a K-1 to the members in the example of an S-corp. Now, there are a few other types of tax returns, but they're very, very rare, and that's not for today's program. Typically, what we got coming up now is the 1065s, the partnerships, and the 1120s. So they get a K-1, and then those partners or those members put that K-1 on their personal tax return, which is due, what day, Emily?
April 15th.
April 15th. And this year, both those dates are hard dates, because the 15th of March is on a Friday, and the 15th of April is on a Monday. So there is no weekend extension, no holiday extension. These are hard deadlines. We have till midnight of those days to file those tax returns. So right now for partnerships and S-corps, we are, if we don't have your information already by now, we are filing extensions. But if you've given us your information, oh, don't fear. We're going to get you done in the next 2 weeks. Actually, we're doing pretty good. We are on track. Things have been going very well. We've just had a few, like I said, just a few issues with the IRS, and mostly it's been those Obamacare rejects that we've been getting. But other than that, it's been good. You were going to talk about, now there are some extensions for people in disaster zones?
Yes. The most recent ones, I think, it was fires in Spokane area.
Spokane fires,
and
right.
And then there was another one that had like flooding, and I don't remember right off because paper didn't make it in the office here with me today.
Yeah, well, a bunch of them hit pretty quick.
But it's been several over the course of the tax season that they've been extending to June 17th to file and to pay, which I thought was generous of them, because it's usually just the file date that it gets extended, but it's also payments for all different kinds of taxes and whatever might have been due April 15th. They're giving you an extra 2 months to pull it together if you had some kind of natural disaster in your locality. It's pretty specific localities.
Yeah, and people will know. I mean, people usually know.
And if you don't, they actually give you credit for it sometimes if you didn't know you were in that disaster area somehow.
Yeah, well, they've got, they do zip code matching. Spokane, San Diego area is the latest one to get tax relief. So there was storms and flooding that struck San Diego January 21st. There was the fires, which were really serious, that hit the Spokane, Washington area August 18th of 2023. So they're extending those two. But you can actually go to FEMA's website, and there's a list of those because it's got to be a designated FEMA disaster situation for you to qualify for that. But most people know. So they're giving you a 2-month extension. Yeah, because the 17th is the 15th of June falls on a weekend. So they're going to go ahead and move that to the 17th. For people that have experienced these wildfires, and you know, I always say it's generous of them to do that, but really, I mean, especially the Spokane fires. I mean, those people lost everything. Is like a tax return, like something they're even thinking about? I mean, I don't know.
Two extra months is going to help them find their documents. I don't know.
Because at that point, I mean, those homes were gone. I mean, that was burnt to the ground kind of a situation in Spokane. Kind of like what happened in L.A. a few years back. I mean, those kind of what happened in Maui. I mean, those homes are gone. Those buildings are gone. So I don't know. But again, I mean, at some point, is it just an exercise in futility? You know, we've got ways when people lose their documents to compile things. We've got systems with the IRS. We've got a way to bring documents, you know, but even they only go back so far. Okay, so proposed changes. I don't really know, should we just thank our sponsors? Because there's no commercials. Why did the commercials not get brought over?
They just didn't get put in. They were supposed to be put in, and there was a snafu in the.
Well, I mean, I admire this. They did all this in 5 days, right? Because they were shut down for 5 days.
Yeah. Well, no, we were never really shut down. We kept the music coming in from, so we were on the air.
Okay.
But we were not here on the air live. But music was coming in. They had that and commercials and stuff like that. But
Well, no, it was not. I mean, not bad. You did it all in 5 days, and
hey,
it's a big move. It's a big move.
Oh, huge move. We had to. Tracy and Lou were finding stuff in the old station that they'd forgotten about. You know.
Well, there was it. That should be. You guys should have set up some kind of a broadcast museum. Did Jim ever throw anything out? I mean, there was equipment I hadn't seen.
I know there was stuff
in 50 years.
There was stuff there, files there, old radio programs that we used to use on records of transcription that we ran back in the 70s that were still piled up in there.
Yeah. Well, I saw the analog dials and
yeah,
just all, that only somebody that was into radio, you know, back 50 years ago would appreciate.
Exactly.
And go. But you know, it was really sad the last couple of days seeing you in the blue room with no furniture.
Last Saturday when I walked in there to do my shift, it was barren.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, just. You saw the blue room, and that's all you saw.
Yeah, well, they were still feeding it to the website, so the camera was still connected.
Yeah.
They were still feeding it to the website, and it was just Tom in the blue room, looking very blue.
Yeah.
Tom was looking very blue in the blue room.
Desolate.
Okay, so let's make pretend we just had a radio commercial. Yeah. We're back! This is Gilbert Talks Taxes. That was the International Morse Code signal. What are these buttons for, by the way? We've got red.
Oh, okay.
We've got yellow. Don't touch it. Okay. Yellow and white.
There's bombs set up.
No, what are these?
No, they're for control. They're waiting on the parts for those, but that's if somebody's on or something, you can hit that center one. It's a cough switch.
The cough switch, yeah.
So you got a cough or something.
It's a mute. The one's a mute.
Yeah.
So I can hit the mute button?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, we can. Yeah, like, yeah.
Just reach over and isn't that wonderful?
I don't think you should have said that. I'm sorry. Okay, we're back. None of that went out over the air, did it? Or Facebook, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, everything. We're back. Everything goes. Everything goes out. Okay. Speaking of Facebook, so I said a couple of weeks ago, let's talk about this. Child tax credit. It's actually called, I'd like to know what it's really called, because this is not the name of it. In Congress, these bills have a whole other name, and it's usually like, you know, House Bill to reconcile the filing of blah, 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 4392184, something like that. But the politicians, they want to put a nice shine on it, so they're calling it the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act of 2024, which actually has very little tax relief for American families and workers. I know, exactly.
TRAF, it doesn't even make an acronym.
It doesn't even make an acronym, I know.
Come on, guys.
You mean TARFWA? No, Trafwa. So there's this bill that they were trying to get passed. And all the media kept reporting was that this was going to be major relief for American families and hardworking people because they were going to expand the child tax credit.
Yeah, they really are calling it Trafwa.
They're calling it Trafwa.
Google Trafwa 2024.
Trafwa 2024. Emily.
HR 704.
But it still has another name. It's like, what is the name of HR 704? And you will find the real name of it, which they don't use because there's no way to make those look good. It was like the bill that created the healthcare.gov was the Omnibus Reconciliation Traffic and Roads Bill. And I did a whole program on that. What does traffic and roads have to do with healthcare? That bill had everything, including the kitchen sink, in there. There was like money for Uganda in there. It's everything in there. It's just classic pork barrel. They try to get everything in there. So this bill, it's a piece of nonpartisan, really. Anything in Washington, D.C. is nonpartisan. That's a stretch right there. A piece of nonpartisan legislation that aims to modify the benefit was passed by the House of Representatives on January 31st. Well, I had said that, and I had said before January that this is probably going to pass. Somebody posted, because I said this was going to go nowhere.
That's from Congress.gov.
Congress.gov.
It tells you where it's at in the...
Right, it passed the House. And see, they're simplifying this. So, okay, that's where it is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for pulling that up because...
I just wanted to see what the other name was, but they're not listing another name.
No, they're just calling it all information for HR 7024. Okay, so you actually have to pull up the bill itself with the committee report, and that's usually where you see that. It's a Ways and Means. There has been one roll call vote, and that was the House. So the thing got passed on January 31st. So I said in February, I think it was the second week of February, I can't remember, I came here on the air, and I said, this bill is dead. And somebody said, no, it's passed, and put a link up. Well, but the Senate's what's holding it up. But it's not that simple. The bill, yes, it was a nonpartisan vote. Everybody jumped on it. And when it happened, I said, it's an election year. Of course Congress is going to pass this bill. So they can all go back to their district during the February break and say, look what we're doing. So it got put out there in January that this bill was going to give all this money to families with children. And I came on the air and said, no, it's not. It's only expanding it $200 per child. And I'm not saying that's not a lot of money. That is a lot of money, especially if you have, you know, three or four children. That's $600, $800 if you qualify. The problem is most people aren't going to qualify for this. And that's the point I was trying to make on the air. Okay, so on February 15th, which was that? I forgot what the weekend program we did. So this was literally right after I was on the air. And I said, somebody in D.C. must be listening to my mm-hmm. program. So on February 15th, Danny Werfel, the IRS commissioner, came on. He went to he testified before a committee, I believe, don't quote me. I believe it was House and Ways. Ways and Means, sorry. Ways and Means, it was a House committee, Ways and Means. He went there and he testified on the 15th and he said, please, taxpayers should not wait for this legislation to file their returns, quote unquote. Okay, he said that on the 15th. And when they asked him, well, why? Because they're saying, wait, you know, you're going to get all this money. And the media really it just goes to show they don't understand. They were quoting the tax law saying, you know, it was $7,000. Well, $7,000 is the maximum credit. If you make so much money, if you get earned income tax credit, child tax credit, additional, that's every credit piled up on top of it. Very few people hit that perfect like that. But people started calling us up saying, oh, I don't want to file my tax return yet because I'm going to get $7,000. And we're like, no, you're not. There's no, what? $7,000? No. So, but he came on and said, do not wait. And then he said, if you qualify and you get the additional money, we will go ahead and give it to you. We can program the computers to do that. And then Congress asked him, how long will it take you to program your computers? And he said, if this law got passed today, which February 15th, that law wasn't going to get passed. I mean, at that point, it was sitting on somebody's desk and they were getting ready to take a break. As a matter of fact, I think they took the break the following week and they just got back. They just got back last week. Actually, they got back Monday and got back in session Monday. So he said, it's going to take us 6 to 8 weeks to reprogram our computers. And so we will automatically give people their money. Now, what I did is I just, unscientific, I was just looking at tax returns as I was filing them, and I tried to see if this bill had gone through, how many people would actually qualify for that extra money. And I was coming up with like zero. Like, because it was early, we hadn't done that many yet. So it wasn't, like I said, it's very unscientific. I was just glancing, looking, oh, okay, they maxed. Because you max out the amount of tax you pay, the credit that gets used to pay the tax. That's the portion we're talking about. So if you're below standard deduction, head of household or married filing jointly, you're below head of household, you're going to have no tax. Your tax is going to be zero. So you're not going to get that extra money. So I'm looking, and it was like zero, 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 maxed out. And I was looking, so like out of 20, it had been nothing. And then I looked again, if I thought about it while I was e-filing, I was looking at them. And I thought to myself, I said, self, I estimated 5% of all Americans would qualify for this money. And this was getting so much bandwidth, you would have thought this was like back in COVID when they were giving money to everybody. And the media, and there are still websites today. I was researching this yesterday. There are still websites telling you to wait. That you're gonna get this money. You should wait just to make sure. And we don't know how it's gonna play out with the IRS. We do know how it's gonna play out. 2 weeks ago, the head of the IRS told us how it's gonna play out. They're gonna reprogram their computers, and if you qualify, you are gonna get this money. But he said, the IRS just said, because I guess they're still getting a lot of calls on this, the IRS, and this is the one I saw, Emily, I think I told you this yesterday, the IRS estimates that only 10% of filers may be eligible for a slight adjustment. Boy, that's got that's political double talk if I ever saw it. 10% of filers may be eligible for a slight adjustment to their refunds if the child tax credit expansion bill passes in its current form.
That's got so many like if, ands, and maybes.
Yeah. So, well, that's why I guess I'm going back around, because I don't want people to misunderstand me. So yes, it has passed, but I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb right now at 8:36 on March 2nd. And I'm going to say, this bill is not going to see the light of day. I may be wrong. They may pass it this afternoon. I don't know. But I'm going to say this was strictly a political football that they were using right before the primaries. Because, you know, what a coinkydink it was right around the time of the first round of primaries. That it was a nonpartisan. All of a sudden, they're all nonpartisan in Washington. They're all voting for this bill to give more money to Americans and workers and every buzzword that they can to get votes. I remember telling Christy, oh, it's an election year.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
The official title. To make improvements to the child tax credit, to provide tax incentives to promote economic growth, to provide special rules for the taxation of certain residents of Taiwan with income from sources within the United States, to provide tax relief with respect to certain federal disasters, to make improvements to low-income housing tax credit, and for other purposes.
That is the official title of the Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act of 2024. I guess it's Taiwanese workers. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's really providing very little, very, very little relief.
I mean, that's kind of vague for other purposes.
For other purposes.
That leaves the door open for all kinds of
Well, and our own senator that was censured, by the way, by the state GOP, Tom Tillis, is not going to sign it unless he gets whatever he wants. I really don't know what he wants. I kind of read through it quickly. He's got things he wants in there. Our other senator is not going to sign it, period. He doesn't care. He's not up for re-election, so he doesn't care. He's not going to sign it. Tom Tillis wants to sign it, but he wants money for something. And that's where it's at in the Senate. They all want something in there, and they're not going to get it. And this thing, I don't think it's going to see the light of day. I think it's going to get buried. Right now, if you look it up online, the only websites that are even talking about it are some websites saying that, you know, reach out to your senators and tell them to vote for this, or there is some provisions in there for extending the bonus depreciation, and some websites are telling businesses to extend their tax returns because these provisions could be a game changer. No, it's not going to be a game changer. Don't wait. File your tax return. If this thing gets passed 6 months from now, we'll amend your tax return. And there's a benefit, we'll amend. But even extending that, I don't see, because it's already baked in the cake. When we're doing tax planning, we're already looking at depreciation. Yes, it may change bonus depreciation a little, but, and they say it's going to be retro, but it's not that much. So that is the status. And I am going on a limb. Yes, Emily's making notes. This is going to be in the archives. I am going on a limb that this bill will not see the light of day. And right now, it's not even tabled for discussion. And it's not like they're all going to get together and say, all in favor, all against, and pass it. Then it's got to go through reconciliation. It's got to go to...
Well, yeah, if they put a bunch of riders on it, it's got to go back to the House.
It's got to go back to the House if it changes in any significant way.
Hey, this is Gilbert Talks Government.
Gilbert Talks Government. Well, and Emily, it's hard to talk about taxes without talking about government. And it's the same thing with investments. So, you know, what is it we do? We do financial planning and we do tax returns. And our focus on all our investments is the tax implication of those investments, because it is serious. And in this kind of environment, it's very hard. And it really, you know, makes us be on our game looking at what's happening. And sometimes I know it comes across as cynical, but I know, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck. It's got to be a politician. And, I know what they're going to do. And it's just been years of me following this and which way it's going to go. And sometimes we try to be a little bit ahead of the curve with this because of the implications of it. The idea behind the investing that I do is we try to make it as apolitical as possible, because we don't want them messing with your investments. You know, we don't put it in things that are volatile. We don't put it in things that are subject to this kind of change. So somebody said to me, well, how do you describe your investing style? I said, grandma. I do what grandma used to do, right? Bury it in a deep hole and let it grow organically. Okay, that's how grandma invested. And when you needed money, who did you go to? Grandma. In my case, it was grandpa.
I was going to say, we went to grandpa.
You went to grandpa. Grandpa always, I need a car. You got $500? Yeah, hold on. Grandpa always had, right? Yeah, I mean, they knew what they were doing. Maybe they didn't, but, you know, everybody tries to talk like, oh, yeah, you know, that's old school. Listen, old school works. And all this kind of stuff, we try to work with investment products that are stable, investment products that aren't going to, you know, just change. I had a man come, or deviate from taxes here a minute, talk about investments a little. I don't talk about investments a lot because, and Emily, we're thinking about changing that more, because I've been talking to my back office about it, and I really do want to get more into investments. But investments are one-on-one. What's a good investment for you is not a good investment for Tom. What's a good investment for Tom is not a good investment for you. It may, but more than likely, it's not. Everybody's needs are different, and everybody's expectations are different. Everybody. And even when I'm talking to a husband and a wife, you've got two completely different worlds happening. So
yeah, two completely different perspectives on where they want their money to go in 10 years.
Exactly, or 20 years. And I often start the conversation, and people think they're going to come sit with me and talk about stocks and bonds and Wall Street and, you know, and what's going on, you know, and because I know how this works, you know. You get people like that, and yeah, I want to, you know, and they say whatever the buzzword of the day is, and I get it back to what do you want to do in your retirement? What's your retirement look like? What are you hoping to do? Where are you hoping to be? And you know, if the wife's idea of retirement is a little, you know, cabin in the mountains and time with grandchildren, and his idea of retirement is a bass boat with gel coat, you know, out at the ocean, you know, we've got some ground to cover there. And it's really about you and what it is you want to do and what kind of lifestyle you want to live in retirement. People are under this misconception that in retirement they're going to need less money than they did when they were working. And it's like, no, you still have to buy food, you still need electricity, you still need, you know, the things. Actually, we've learned that it pretty much stays the same. The needs stay the same. Most everybody's going to get Social Security. My problem or my concern about Social Security is Social Security going to be there? Yes, it's going to be there. I remember when I was doing this 40 years ago, when we were doing, you know, financial planning, we would say, of course, you know, that was a much younger Gilbert would say, and because we would talk about all the revenue sources, and we'd say, yes, and Social Security, if it's even there. Where here I am 35 years later, 40 years later, and yes, Social Security is there. The thing I'm worried about is, what's a dollar going to be worth? I mean, we've seen the erosion of what's happened to the dollar. What's a dollar going to be worth in 20 years? And that's where nobody knows. That's the unknown. But Social Security will be there. There are things we can do with contractual investments. There are things we can do with safe investments. And there's always a little bit of element of risk in those kind of investments. You were going to say something, I'm sorry.
I was just going to comment on that about Social Security being there. They tried to scare our generation away too, that you guys are going to deplete it all.
Yeah, oh yeah, the baby boomers are going to deplete Social Security. Well, that's not going to happen. The government will make good on Social Security, but the problem is going to be, again, inflation. And look at what's happening. The Postal Service is an example. The government promised all these postal workers they were going to have these really good pensions, retirement plans, which they don't have anymore, by the way. But that was back in the day. If you put in so many years, you were going to get a pension for the rest of your life. They say that the reason the analysts say, the reason postage is so much is because a big part of that 65, what is it at? Now, we got a little machine at the office. I just stick the envelopes in.
60-something, right.
Yeah, 60-something. You can't even mail two letters for a dollar anymore. You know, every now and then I crack open my stamp collection and I see one penny stamps. And that actually, like, mailed a letter.
Mail a letter, was it just to make up the difference of the postage?
No. I've got old, I'm talking old stamps, two penny stamps and three penny stamps and four penny stamps.
They made a whole letter.
Yeah, there was actually aeroplane aeroplane. I don't know why they spell aeroplane stamps that were like 13 cents to mail letters. Okay. Air mail. Yeah, Tom's over there going down. Remember? Right. Yeah, back in the day. Today, I don't know, it's like $20-something to overnight a package. $20-$30 to overnight a package. It's that inflation and that erosion of it. I have clients that'll be in their 90s. I've got quite a few clients in their 90s. And their Social Security payments, their Social Security will be, you know, $18,000 a year. When they retired at age 65, 25 years ago, that was like the top tier. They were like, that was making good money. Now, today you look at that and go, ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here you go.
So you're saying the price of postage has gone up to pay their pensions?
To pay their pensions. That's what a lot of it. I don't know the exact number, but I've read several articles on the topic But they will not, and the reason I brought that up is they will not default. They will pay those postal workers their pensions. They're going to honor that. I think that's what they're going to do with Social Security. They will honor it, regardless of what happens to the funding of it. Where's the money going to come from? I don't know. But I heard, I want to say it's like 70% of that 65 cents, whatever postage stamp, and all the postage. I've heard all kinds of numbers. 70%, 73% of it is to pay those pensions. So the other 20-something percent, 30%, is all really the only money the post office is getting for quote-unquote operations, current salaries, equipment, and things like that, and updating. And plus, look at what email and online has done to them. I mean...
And the price of fuel.
Who writes a letter anymore? I mean, everybody sends an email. Who writes a check and puts it in the mail anymore? I do. But even that, I don't do that many. And they're going to start offering more incentives to pay online. You're going to see that, because that's what they want to do. They don't want to be cashing checks. So it's Social Security will be there. The concern is, what's it going to be worth? There are investments that we can make that protect for that and look for that. But it starts with a one-on-one conversation on what you want to do. And this next generation is pretty sharp, and they do get it. And it's very interesting, because I was wondering what was going to happen with them and how they were going to be viewing investments, because a lot of them are doing these things online. And, you know, the threat has always been, you old school financial planners, you're going to be a thing of the past, because everybody's going to be doing all their investments on their smartphones.
With AI.
They're going to be, I remember 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, we were just being inundated with emails from all these people. You better get on board with this. People aren't going to come see you anymore. They're not, you better get on board with this. And I said, no. There is a place for what I do for people that want one-on-one advice, for people that want somebody to sit down and listen to them, and they care about their situation. AI will never do that. And it's just going to put you in a bunch of generic junk that's going to crash and burn. And that is what's happening. I started to say earlier, I had a young man come who did exactly that. Did autopiloted all his investments, and then everything just crashed. For one thing, he put a lot of it in cryptocurrency, which people, every time I talk about cryptocurrency, people go, well, Bitcoin's up. Yeah, Bitcoin's up, but what about the other 1,856 cryptocurrencies? You know, what about, I know somebody that just lost $76,000 on cryptocurrency.
I just can't see putting your whole future into some computer program that doesn't know you, doesn't know your situation, and has been written by who knows who to put your money in specific things. That's a big gamble.
It is a huge gamble. And then I come along and say, let me handle your investments for you. I'm going to actually have like you're going to know where your money's sitting. Like, I'm going to put your money in XYZ stock, YYY stock, ZZZ stock, and this is what we're going to do. And this is the plan. Or you want guaranteed income for life. You want guaranteed retirement. You want a private pension. Okay, there are these products. You want, liquidity. You want this much, we can do this. And it's just, to me, it's like you worked your whole life and then you're going to let some computer handle it.
No, thank you.
I just...
It's interesting you brought this topic up, because just this week somebody was asking me for a Gilbert Talks Taxes episode about investments. And I said, well, he historically does not talk about investments.
And I think I need two more. Thank you for bringing that up, because I've been talking to the back office. So what is it I do? I am a financial planner. I have securities licenses. I have a 63, 65, 67, and I have a 6, although I don't actively work with my 6, but I do have a 6. And I have insurance licenses to sell variable and non-variable products, strictly life insurance. That's all I do. I don't do any other kind of insurance. People ask me if I, do a long-term care. I recommend long-term care, and I recommend MedSup supplements, and I recommend a lot of things, but I recommend what's good for you, not because I sell it or not. You know, it's what do you need? Let me get it back to taxes. And I do want to talk a little bit about, I do want to talk some more about taxes. We've got 7 minutes left. I want to talk about the hobby versus businesses. I actually brought a great article written by an EA about how to tell if you have a hobby or a business. Maybe in the last few minutes of the program, I'm just going to hit some high points and I'm going to bring that back around because I get questioned on that a lot. But let me keep going in this investment vein. There's a lot of things that I don't do, but I recommend you do. And those of you that listen to me know one of the biggest things that I'm all about is having a will. I had another lady come to me this week, a daughter, father passed away, no will. I know, it was a bad, it's not as bad as I've seen, but there was just, and fortunately this family, you know, came together and pulled some things together and appointed her as the executrix and, you know, blah, 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 and created, did some of the right things. But that was a kind of a scary month there because the father dies and then they can't access the bank accounts. They can't. And every time, it's the classic example. Every time she would talk to him about any of this, he would shut down. He'd get mad and shut down. Didn't want to talk about it. Didn't want to talk about it. And I get it. You know, a lot of them are, it's their money. They've worked hard for it. They don't, you know, it's none of your business, kind of the attitude. I understand it. But there is the other side of it too. When you die, you're going to leave this mess for somebody else to clean up. So I am really, really big on wills. Get a will. I don't do them. I don't sell them. I don't do them. I really don't care where you go. I can recommend some attorneys that I know that do them, but it's up to you. But get a will. Please get a will. If you have any kind of estate, even if you just want your burial plans made known and just, you know, so people know where's the money, because they've got things that have to be done. And if you haven't prepaid your burial, which I've got mixed feelings on that. If you have a good will and you've given good instructions, and the money's there in an investment or something, leave it in the investment. Because if you prepay your funeral, you're not getting any interest. You're not getting anything. Yeah, it's paid for, but so I got a mixed feeling. But on the other hand, it's better than nothing. And it takes that off the estate's hands to do that. So there's a lot of things that I do that I do, and there's things that I don't do, but I'm a, you know, big proponent of. So I have securities licenses. Yeah, 5 minutes. Okay. So we do investments. I'm going to be talking more about investments, but I'm not going to be talking about investments. I'm not going to be telling you what's that guy that screams and yells a lot that tells people what stocks to buy and all that. I've watched like 2 minutes of his program, and that's all I could take. Most of the time, he's wrong. That's the thing.
The Motley Fool?
That's another website for that. No, this guy does that. And anyway, the point of my story is I don't want to talk about investments. I want to talk about the concepts behind investing. And what are the concepts? And what are, again, when I say I'm old school, what do I mean? Okay, I've got, how many minutes do I have left? Oh, Tom, 4 minutes left. Okay, hobby versus business. This is referring to an article here in Tax Pro, our industry magazine for us enrolled agents. Tax Pro, the National Association of Tax Preparers. Jessica Abella, she's an EA and an ABA, wrote a great article, probably one of the best I've read, and I've read a lot of them, on a hobby versus a business. So I've only got a few minutes here. I'm not going to get into the article as much as I'd like to, but I'll talk about it in weeks to come. But I get this question asked a lot. What is the difference between a hobby and a business? At what point are you trying to just get a tax write-off for your hobby?
Have an intent to make a profit?
That's the number one thing, Emily. That's why
I just happened to read that in the IRS book yesterday about hobby versus business. I didn't know you were going to bring it up.
And look at what their cover picture is. Those of you, I don't know if they can pick this up on the camera, but I always use the example of it's a girl with her horse. It's an equine. She's in her equine outfit with her little riding pants and her little riding hat and her crop in her hand, and she is riding her horse, because that's always the example I use. People that have a horse, maybe 10, 15, 20 acres, and they want to create a farm. And I'm like, okay, what are you growing on this farm?
Hay for the horse.
Hay for the horse, okay? So at what point is it a hobby? And at what point is it a business? And so the biggest misconception that people say is, like the man, this was right before COVID, and then COVID kind of really wiped it out. But this man started a business growing microgreens. And he spent thousands of dollars on lights and racks and a watering system and a computer and blah, 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 to do this microgreens. And specifically, he was growing these for a certain ethnic group. He's part of that ethnic group. It's a nationality, and it's in a lot of their cooking. So he had a lot of potential accounts. Well, COVID happened. All these restaurants closed. So there was no demand for this. So we did start the business, and we wrote off all the expenses, but he had no income because it was going to take a good 2 years to have a crop. So the question is, well, I didn't make any money. You didn't make any money, but you had an intent to make a profit. You were laying the groundwork. You bought this equipment. It's totally legit what he was doing. Totally. So people say, well, I didn't make any money, so I can't write off the expenses. Well, no, you can.
That's the 3 out of 5 rule, isn't it?
Yes. That's one of the... So what in an audit, what they're going to do, what an auditor is going to do is he's going to look at the whole picture, you know. And so some people think, well, I'll just have some occasional profits. So somebody will go to a show and maybe sell some of their product, you know, like the wood turner that... It's really a wood turning. It's a hobby, but it'll go to something and it'll, you know, sell a few things. So I'm going to get into this some more, and I'll talk about the 3 out of 5 rule. I'll talk about applying the different factors, historical, and what it is. What is a hobby and what is a business? And for those of you that are transitioning your hobby into a full-time business, I'll try to lay some groundwork for you. You know, at what point can you legitimately start writing all this stuff off? And what about things you bought before it was a business? How do we incorporate those things as business assets? Okay, it's 9 o'clock, Tom. The program is over, and I didn't stop for one break.
You're professional.
Thank you, Tom. I will be back next Saturday right here live at, we're still WCAB. Yeah. We're still 101. Wait, I'm going to get lost.
100.9
FM. And we're still 590 AM. None of that has changed. Nope. It's just the website that's changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the website changed a long time ago, but you could still get there from what you were saying. It would redirect you, but you were just, it was ingrained.
It was ingrained in me. Oh yeah, it's 10 years. I've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah,
Emily, and they went and changed to the other side of the road. I can't believe you guys would do that to me.
We're on Facebook
now. Yeah, about 15 years too late. But that's okay. We're on Facebook. Thank you for listening, everyone. I'll be back next week. This is Gilbert Carmona. If you need me, give me a call. 828-289-9300.